Welcome back in hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We're going to have Emory Hunt from Football Game Plan join us to begin the 8 o'clock hour. We'll look ahead to the NFL draft with him. Looking forward to that conversation. Lots of possibilities for the Titans still on the board in the NFL draft. At 8:45, Matt Duchene, Predator Centerman, drops by for his weekly visit. And then at 9:30, Adam Vingen from The Athletic, who came out with a very interesting piece on Matthias Ekholm yesterday that we'll get to coming up in the next segment as well. So lots still to come here on the show today, and we'll take your text all show long on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe, the Predators back in action last night. They fall 3-2 in overtime to the Carolina Hurricanes. But given the situation heading into the game, probably an outcome that was better than most Predators fans expected last night, with Ellis already being out, Matt Duchene out of the lineup as well, UC Saros not available for this team, and it was announced yesterday that Roman Josi is week-to-week with an upper body injury. Now, obviously, we talked about it on Monday. He got boarded in the Dallas game, was bleeding everywhere, comes back later in the game, wins the game for the Predators with a really impressive shootout goal. But the Predators announced yesterday that he is out week to week. So that is obviously a tough blow for a team that has no margin for error anyway, and the injuries are starting to pile up. And the question now becomes, if you're the Predators and you look at the way the season has unfolded to this point, and now with the injuries starting to pile up, how much time should be spent this season focusing on the development of some of these younger players like Eli Tolvanen and Rem Pitlick and Jeremy Davies getting into the lineup last night as well? How much of a focus should that be for the Predators moving forward?
Well, I mean, when you ask that question, I mean, are you talking about from John Hines' perspective?
Organizationally.
Yeah. So just getting more young guys on the ice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I say thumbs up, you know. I mean, I think we're starting to see it and may see more. No one's going to in that room or maybe even in the building say, hey, wave the white flag and let's just have a whole bunch of young guys out there and see what they can do. We're not there. Maybe you get to that point at some point. But at this, I mean, you've got injuries anyway, so you have opportunity that you didn't want to be created that has been created. And I just think if you really think about this from a fan perspective, what do fans want to see? They know where the team's going, where the trend is going. This team's not going to be in the playoffs. So what do they want to see? They want to see those guys. I mean, it's got to be exciting for fans to see what Eli Tolvanen is doing now with this opportunity.
Another assist last night, by the way, for Eli Tolvanen.
So the more young guys you can get out there to show fans that, you know, there's some future in some of these guys, I think the better.
It's interesting because the young guys so far, and granted, on some of them, there's an extremely limited sample size, so you can't overreact to it. I think the young guys have come in, for the most part, done a pretty good job. Like, I think Rem Pitlick's been fine the first couple of games he's been there. We know about Tolvanen. He's been really good. I thought Jeremy Davies did a good job last night. I mean, he's not Roman Josi, obviously, but I thought he came in and looked good. There are things to be excited about with him on the power play, especially. And he's a guy that, you know, you got back in the PK Subban trade that maybe you thought was just a throw-in. But based on the way he's played at the American Hockey League level and from some of the things I saw last night, I think there's some impressive things to build on there if you're the Predators. So the good news is we've talked about the prospect pool that they have, and it's not overly deep. But some of these guys at the top of that pool look like they could be good players as they move forward here. And to me, that's got to be encouraging if you're a Predators fan, because now part of the equation is trying to figure out who's going to be a part of the solution as you move forward here.
And you have to figure that out with guys like Davies and even Carrier. I mean, we've been talking about Carrier for like 3 years now. Is he at least an NHL defenseman or not? And we're gonna find out here in the next couple of months. And as someone who obviously watches this team day in and day out, it's nice to see these young guys now getting an opportunity, whether it's Davies, Carrier, Pitlick, Tolvanen. Whereas earlier in the season, it felt like, you know, let's bring up Michael McCarron or Sean Malone, and that is the last thing that I want to see on this Preds roster right now, is Michael McCarron getting in the lineup over one of these young guys that may or may not be a part of the future.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly at some point you transition, you know, at that point you're like, okay, who do I trust right now tonight? And now it's more like, I mean, you have to at least be more open to it. And they are, obviously. Well, more open to those guys getting real long looks.
And the question that you posed to Robbie at the start of the segment of, are we talking about John Hines or something else? John Hines, with you, Joe, when you asked him the question about Pekka and Yusi a couple weeks ago, I mean, he was basically saying, we got to go with the guy right now.
Right. Who
but the question
win?
Was about the future, you know, surrounding Yusi Saros.
Right.
But I wonder if things have maybe changed a tad in the last couple of weeks.
Well, and injuries can force your hand on that as well if you're an organization. And right now, I mean, losing your captain is a big deal. And John Hines talked about the loss of Roman Josi yesterday and how you try to overcome that as a team when you lose a guy who's so important. Here's what Predators head coach John Hines had to say.
Roman's a good – I mean, he's such a valuable guy on the ice as well as off the ice, as you said. And, you know, the way he goes about his business, the way that he practices, the way he conducts himself, really everywhere that the team's around, locker room, bus, meals, hotels, those types of things. So the good thing is he's still with us here, and he's still in and around the guys. You know, I think what you do miss when your captain is out of the lineup is just – you know, the voice in between periods and sometimes on the bench when things are going well or things aren't going well. He usually is a guy that speaks up. So, you know, I think it's on a guy like Ekholm, some of the older players that are in the locker room that have been around a bit, and even some of the newer guys. I mean, we've added some guys with lots of experience to our team. So I feel like, you know, you're never going to replace Roman's voice, and no one is going to replace him on the ice or off the ice. But I think when guys just step up a little bit in their roles and experience, it always helps.
So that was John Hines discussing Roman Josi. And Joe, when the news came out yesterday that Josi will be week to week with an upper body injury, obviously a lot of Preds fans upset about that. And go back to the game on Sunday against Dallas where Jason Dickinson just boards him into the side of the backboard there. And there's a nice still frame shot of Yossi's head just pressed up against the glass where he's been boarded. And it's interesting. Like, it's one of those things where, you know, the hit, I guess, in real time doesn't look super egregious, but it was egregious enough, in my opinion, to be a penalty. I mean, the ref's standing there looking right at it. Nothing happens. We know what happens after that. Johansson gets frustrated, takes a penalty, and then the Stars are able to come back in the game after that. But Predators fans very frustrated that nothing was done or called on that hit on Roman Josi. And with that in mind, let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Nate texts in and says, if the Department of Player Safety wasn't run by a goon, then maybe these plays would be less likely to happen, and players like Tom Wilson, who make their pay on hurting players, wouldn't be in the league. Of course, Nate referring there to George Parros, in charge of the Department of Player Safety, who used to make his living being an enforcer, basically, running around hitting people. Now, I hear what he's saying. Tom Wilson also has 17 points in 21 games, so he does a lot rather than just hitting people. But he has crossed the line many times, times in the league. I understand the frustration from Predators fans when they go back and look at that hit. I mean, Jason Dickinson skates off scot-free, and now Roman Josi out of the lineup week to week.
Well, speaking of young guys and egregious hits, how about Dante Fabbro last night?
Yeah, he's probably going to get suspended.
That was bad.
Yeah.
Now, that was bad.
I would assume at some point that you're going to be without Ryan Ellis, Roman Josi, and Dante Fabbro here coming up.
I was surprised that wasn't a five-minute major.
I was, too.
Me, too. But it's going to come back around. What do you think, one-game suspension or more?
It may be more.
Yeah.
Now, the thing that he's got going for him, it's not like Dante Fabbro has like this laundry list of hitting people and being suspended.
Yeah, when you look like you're 12 years old, maybe that helps you a little bit, you know? Like he's not a goon. That was a bad hit.
That's a bad hit. And you leave your feet, hit him right in the head. It's not a good hit. I would expect probably Dante Fabbro going to be facing a suspension from the league on that hit. Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. John from Clarksville texts in. It says the youth movement was in full effect last night. Six rookies for the Predators on the ice. That youth movement some Predators fans have been wanting? Got a pretty good dose of it last night.
Right. Now, you wanted maybe not that many, but you wanted a little more of a youth movement early with a team that was competitive.
Right.
Now, this isn't exactly how you want it to come about, but again, what do people want to watch at this point? You know, they want to see some more stories like what Tolvanen has become right. This year.
Speaking of the Predators, how'd you like to watch the Preds game in style? Make sure you're tuning in later on the show as we reveal a key word for you to text into the game line at 615-737-1025 for your chance to win the T-Mobile Hockey Homegate. It's your chance to watch a weekend Preds game with a Dos Equis prize pack, which includes a case of beer, dessert from Nothing But Cakes, a T-Mobile prize pack, and food provided by 312 Pizza Company in Germantown. You must be 21 or older to enter, and we'll have that opportunity coming up for you a little bit later here in the show. When we come back, we'll continue the discussion on the Nashville Predators. Get your reaction on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And get into a little bit more of the Forsberg situation that we talked about yesterday. David Poile with some comments addressing the future of Philip Forsberg. We'll play those for you next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. The Game is kicking off every weekend with free beer. And who doesn't love free beer, just like our good friend Ryan Porth? Make sure you're tuning in all day on Friday for your chance to win a $25 gift card from Bavarian Beer House located at Opry Mills Mall. We'll have that opportunity for you on Friday on what I'm sure will be a phenomenal trivia question put forth by Ryan Porth.
It's always phenomenal.
It is.
Isn't it?
It's always great.
I don't do many great things, but that trivia question.
Trivia question's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Your polls are getting better, too. Oh, that's right. You did the poll. Yeah, whatever.
It's all right. All right. Thank you. And now Ryan,
it's a team effort.
Lost control again.
It's a team effort here.
Thank you.
At 102.5.
Thanks for the compliment.
Sure is. So we were talking yesterday, Joe, about Philip Forsberg and whether or not the Predators should consider trading him. Now, I even had some reaction last night as people were continuing to react to this on Twitter, and somebody was like, why are you talking about this? Like, are you just trying to get clicks? I'm like, no, man, I'm not making this up. People are actually talking about Philip Forsberg and whether or not the Predators should trade him around the league. This is not a Robbie Stanley creation, so I appreciate the thoughts on that, but I did not make this up.
Clickbaiter you.
I know. I've got to really watch what I'm doing there. But this is a conversation that I think will continue to be had not only here in Nashville but around the league as well until Philip Forsberg signs an extension here with the Predators. Now, of course, you and I have both said probably shouldn't trade Philip Forsberg. He's a guy playing very well for this team right now, a point-per-game player, a little bit more than point-per-game player for this group, but a guy that maybe as soon as this offseason you try to lock up to long-term. And David Poile joins Darren Donick and Chase every Tuesday at 11:15, and he was on the show yesterday and was asked about the untouchable list that's out there and the rumors regarding Philip Forsberg. Here's what David Poile had to say.
David, as you know, there are a lot of insiders or experts around the league, and this time of year they report untouchable lists for certain teams. Do you have a personal untouchable list for your team, and is Philip Forsberg on that list?
I try to be, I try to be open with, you know, with everybody, because you're exchanging information. You want to hear what people have to say, so you don't want to just set up necessarily barriers to any conversation. Having said that, I don't think that Philip Forsberg is going to be a guy that we have any interest in trading at this time.
So that was David Poile yesterday on Darren Donick and Chase. And Joe, I don't think anything overly groundbreaking there. I mean, he did kind of leave the door open of, don't really operate in terms of untouchable lists. Like, you don't want to just close off a conversation before it begins as a general manager. But having said that, probably not going to be trading Philip Forsberg. So I don't think a huge surprise there.
I don't know. He said, I really don't think.
He did.
And then he said, at this time.
He did.
I don't know. I think he was just saying that he's waiting until June to trade Philip Forsberg.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's just saying, just hold off, everybody. He's on the block. And we'll bring back a big haul for Phil. Now, that was about as close as you can get, because, of course, the GM's not going to go publicly and say anything absolute, right, in almost any situation.
Sure.
That was as close as you're going to get to it. Like, basically, like, I mean, I even took the chuckle as a little bit of like, yeah, man, we're not trading
Philip Forsberg. So.
But, you know what? That phone is on, and you just don't know who's going to be calling with what on the other end.
Well, I think – you know, I think there's this perception out there that, like, you just hang up the phone and don't take calls on people. That's not what you do as general managers. Like, sure. Like, do you take a call on Philip Forsberg? Sure. You listen. Does that mean that there's any chance whatsoever that you trade him? Probably not. I mean, you'll listen on anything. I mean, there's an old saying in hockey. If Wayne Gretzky can be traded, anyone can be traded. And I buy that. That is absolutely true. Like, do I think that Edmonton is listening very intently on Connor McDavid right now? Probably not. Probably not listening very much. Do you pick up the phone? Maybe.
I mean, if you were David Poyle, you weren't really considering trading Shea Weber.
Yeah.
And then
I was just going to bring up Shea Weber.
Yeah. The other part of the conversation is, oh, well, I'll give you PK Subban.
Then all of a sudden, you start to become a little bit more interested at that point.
Yes. Obviously different situation,
sure,
too, in terms of your trajectory and where you're going and what you're trying to get to. And now it's, again, it's in some form, whatever the timeline is, it's what's going to be the nucleus of this team after whatever happens. Philip Forsberg has got to be part of that, I would think. If he wants to be, and that's the big thing here that we don't know. As we talked about a lot yesterday, you got to have a really good feeling about him wanting to stay here too and go through all that.
Yeah.
Not every player likes that idea. I'm sure Forsberg loves it here, just like everybody. This is what he knows, but does he want to be a part of the things to come?
Right. I mean, that's a question you've got to figure out if you're the Nashville Predators. So we'll see what happens on that front. I think pretty safe to say at this point he's not going anywhere at this deadline unless their socks just get blown off, and I don't think that's going to happen with this deadline, with the cap being what it is. So we'll see what happens on that front. The other Predators player that continues to be in many rumors out there in the NHL with trades is Matthias Ekholm. We've talked a lot about it here on the show. He's number one on the big board at theathletic.com in terms of trade targets in the NHL this offseason. And Adam Vingan from The Athletic, who we'll have on at 9:30 today here on the program to talk more about this, had an interview with Matthias Ekholm talking to him about the situation and the rumors that are out there with trades flying around. And it was a really interesting, I think, honest interview from Matthias Ekholm. He's a guy that he tells it like it is. He doesn't just, you know, beat around the bush. He's a guy that admitted in this interview with Adam Vingan that you can check out on theathletic.com that, you know, he's not focusing on it too much, but he does see the noise out there. He does read some of the things that are being said and says, you know, I read some of it, quote, not trying to read a whole lot of it because, I mean, nobody knows anything right now. I know that my time in Nashville, I've been very fortunate to maybe not be in these conversations as far as I know. But now when I guess our team is doing bad, we understand nobody's happy and neither am I with the way we have played so far. So with that comes decisions for management and that's just part of it. There's not much I can worry about when it comes to that, end quote. And goes on to say later in the article, like, you know, it's flattering in a way because, quote, in his words, if he sucked on the ice, then it would probably be harder to see that they just want to get rid of me. But obviously Ekholm knows that's not the case. He realizes fully that if he's traded, the team could get a pretty good return back for him. I thought a very open and honest interview that Adam did with Matthias Ekholm, and pretty fascinating to see his perspective on this, especially a guy with a very young family, another baby on the way recently as well. So it's got to be a stressful time for him as well.
You know what this piece really brought home for me is Poyle can't trade this guy. What are we going to do without
Ekholm? I know.
What are we going to do without Ekholm? Come on. Ekholm,
love that guy.
Yeah, one of the go-tos for sure for media because, again, he kind of doesn't care, you know, in a good way.
In a good way,
he'll just say what he thinks. But I want to throw this quote at you. And sorry, Vingan, we're reading your whole story on the air. Subscribe to theathletic.com, Adam Vingan, Preds coverage. Here's the quote from Ekholm. Quote, if you look at our team in 2016-17, we went to the final. I don't think the team we have today is any worse. I would say it's probably a better lineup on paper, end quote. What do you think about that?
I mean, it depends on what he's talking about. Like, in the Stanley Cup final with Colton Sissons being your number one center, yeah, it could be better on paper. Well, I don't buy that the whole picture is
I don't
better.
Think that's what he's – I mean, he's talking about that team.
Yeah.
Like, as you know, with Johansson and everybody, yeah.
I mean, you still have Johansson. You've got Matt Duchene in here now. You've got Roman Josi. You've got him. You've got Ryan Ellis. You've got Pekka Rinne. Like, you've still got a lot of pieces that were a part of that that you feel like should be better. You don't have Subban. You don't have Mike Fisher. So there are obviously some big departures.
You don't have Craig Smith.
James Neal. So there are some big departures as well.
Big deal.
I think it's very – it's not as out there as it seems like on the surface. That was part of the discussion last year of how is this team so bad? This may be the best team they've ever had on paper.
Yeah.
Like, how are they this bad?
For one thing, people get older. That's one. Sure. That's one thing. You know, I mean, like Pecorine was, you know, at his peak of his career, probably in that playoff,
yeah.
Right?
And some guys are just not the same right now.
He was older then, so there's that. But also, just on paper, to me, it's also on paper when you look at the stats, career stats of some guys, like what they should be, but
yes.
It's not what they are,
right? Well, I think that's part of it. That's really what it is. Like Ryan Johansson should be at least as good right now, if not better, than he was during that time. He's not, or at least he hasn't played like it.
Victor Arvidsson.
Arvidsson is not.
Versus now, not the same.
So, I mean, I hear what Ekholm is saying there, and I don't necessarily disagree with it, but the reality is some of the guys that are on paper that you feel like are the same have not played the same, and that to me is the difference, and it's a pretty big difference at this point.
Big difference.
So we'll continue to get your reaction on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. As I said, Matt Duchesne dropping by at 8:45. For his weekly visit, and then we'll catch up with Adam Vingan at 9:30 as well from The Athletic. Get into this story with Matthias Ekholm, a little bit more with him. All that coming up later in the show. When we come back, we will switch gears and talk a little bit of the SEC tournament getting underway tonight here in Music City. What do we think of this tournament? Who should be the favorite? And could there be any dark horse candidates to sneak up and win this tournament? We'll discuss that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porter with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Going to have The Choice Is Yours coming your way in the next segment starting at 7:45. Ryan Porter in the questions chair today, so looking forward to that. And about to talk a little SEC tournament basketball. And speaking of that, make sure all this week you stay tuned to 102.5 The Game for SEC tournament coverage presented by your Middle Tennessee Toyota dealers. Joe, the SEC tournament getting underway today here in Nashville at Bridgestone Arena with Vanderbilt taking on Texas A&M tonight at 6 o'clock, which you can hear that game on our sister station 93.3 Classic Hits tonight with Vanderbilt taking on Texas A&M. What do you think of this matchup for Vanderbilt, and what do you think their chances are to maybe win this game and move ahead here in the tournament?
Well, first of all, I'm very excited to be covering a live basketball
game
tonight. That will be great. Never went over to Vanderbilt this year because, again, you got interviews on Zoom, and then you're sitting in the rafters over there. So it's like, well, TV is better than – I'll be interested to see what the setup is tonight in terms of, you know, fans, how they distribute that, where they put media. Normally there's two games
right
on this night, but obviously Auburn – not invited.
Oh, Bruce Pearl.
No, Bruce Pearl. Yeah, there's take the good and take the bad with Bruce Pearl. Texas A&M is weird. I mean, they've only played 17 games this year. They've had a lot of COVID issues. It's hard to. I mean, they haven't been very good.
They're an 8-9 record.
Yeah,
Vanderbilt's at 8-15.
Yeah, 8-9. Vanderbilt, you know, coming off upset of Ole Miss, and then a really good win. I mean, Cincinnati's not good, but still, they go to Cincinnati and just thump them on the road. And then,
Sorry, Porth.
And then they lose with Scottie Pippen to Ole Miss. So, yeah, I mean, they got a chance. I mean, I would favor Vanderbilt. I don't know what the line is, but I would favor Vanderbilt in this game.
Vanderbilt minus one.
Okay. Scottie Pippen Jr., by the way, first team All-SEC. Dylan Dessou, Scholar Athlete of the Year. Dylan Dessou, of course, not playing. If Vanderbilt had Dylan Dessou right now, I would look at them not as a team that had a chance to make it a significant run, but, you know, I'd like them a lot in this game. And who knows? The winner of this game gets Florida. The winner of that game gets Tennessee. So Tennessee is waiting right now. Friday, 1 o'clock is when they'll play their first game. They're going to play either Florida, Vanderbilt, or Texas A&M. Probably Florida. But I'm not putting it past Vanderbilt to win tonight and give a little scare. So one thing you see in conference tournaments a lot, eventually it catches up with you if you have to play these early games. But what you see a lot is if a team, like maybe you'll see it with Tennessee or with Alabama if they have to play Kentucky Friday, a team that played the night before isn't tired yet,
yeah.
but they've gotten kind of used to the environment and everything, and they've gotten in a little bit of a rhythm, and you've been sitting there not playing for a while, and you see upsets happen that way. So this would be, you know, big for Vanderbilt just to get a win in this thing and stick around a little bit. So Scottie Pippen Jr., I mean, he's 20.6 and 4.9 points and assists, second in the league in both. He's worth the price of admission. So that's the draw tonight.
That is the draw tonight, and we'll see if Vanderbilt is able to get it done. And then, as you said, if they win this game, they'll be taking on Florida, and the winner of that game takes on Tennessee on Friday. We'll get to Tennessee a little bit more here in just a second. But as you evaluate the tournament as a whole, with Alabama being the top seed, I think Arkansas starting to play very good basketball as of late, would you simply say Alabama is the favorite and there's a gap between them and everybody else at this point in the tournament? How would you handle this? Because like I watch Arkansas play right now, and I'm not sure if I'm a team in the SEC, that's the team I want to be seeing. Arkansas looks awfully good at the moment.
Yeah, I don't think there's that much of a gap. And Alabama is great story, such a fun team to watch. But the way they play, certainly, it kind of opens them up to – you just have – they're very reliant on three-point shooting. More and more teams are. The analytics say that's what you should do. Nate Oates is big on that, and it's worked out great for them. But I don't think that there's some big gap. And I agree, Arkansas playing really well. I think LSU is dangerous. I mean, even a team like, you know, Missouri, the 7 seed, now they, if they can beat Georgia tomorrow, they would get Arkansas Friday.
Yep.
You know, Missouri's a pretty good team. That's the thing. Like, the SEC this year, if Kentucky's going to be 9-15, the SEC's down automatically. It's just, it starts with Kentucky. It always has, and it always will. But it's a pretty good league in terms of depth. I mean, again, go down to tonight. Texas A&M and Vanderbilt, they're losing teams. They're not garbage teams, you know? And I think South Carolina might be the worst team in the league.
They're pretty bad.
They're the 11 seed. But there's a lot of good teams in the league. And I do think with Arkansas, with Alabama, LSU maybe, and I do think with Tennessee, you know, you have a chance, you have teams that could hang around, get into that second week in the NCAA tournament and make noise.
We talked to Kyle Tucker from The Athletic yesterday about Kentucky and the roster that they have put together and just how it has not gelled to this point under John Calipari this year. But Kyle did say, I mean, probably one of the two or three most talented teams in the SEC in Kentucky this year. As you look at them, starting with the game against Mississippi State on Thursday, what sort of a chance would you give them to make a deep run in this tournament, given the fact that they have played against Tennessee very well, they beat them once, played very well against Alabama as well? What sort of a chance would you give Kentucky in this tournament? Maybe not to win it, because I think it's a lot to ask going from Thursday to Sunday, but to make a deep run, and Kyle said maybe even get to Sunday at this point.
I mean, this is everything for them. I would expect, as always, and I know it won't have as much impact, of course, but I would expect, as always, for there to be more Kentucky blue in that building than anything else. This is the whole season for them. They know it. They know they have to win. And, I mean, think about if you watch that game at Tennessee, really if you watch both Tennessee games, I mean, Johnson and Springer went nuts in the second half. They flipped that game around. But for, like, I don't know, 65 of 80 minutes they played against Tennessee, they kicked their butt.
Yeah.
They looked pretty good. You know, it's like a lot of teams. If you're hitting shots, everything looks better. I mean, they have some nice pieces, some athleticism. They almost beat Bama already. So that's the thing. If they can, first of all, you got to beat Mississippi State. But if they can do that, and then you have what I just talked about, that little edge where you played the day before and the favorite's been sitting there, you beat Alabama in the first game Friday, I mean, it's all on the table for you, you know? So, yeah, I do think that Kentucky being the story this weekend, it won't shock me if they get there. And, of course, if they do beat Alabama, we may be talking about Kentucky-Tennessee on Saturday. We've seen some.
Yeah.
A couple years ago, Kentucky-Tennessee on Saturday was incredible. Won't be the same kind of game if that's the case, but huge stakes for Kentucky. I mean, they know they have to, just like Duke. You know, Duke in the ACC tournament yesterday. Boston College is bad. They beat them, but still, they beat them by 35. They played really well. They know they have to win it. And hey, college basketball fans, enjoy this. Enjoy Kentucky and Duke having to win their conference tournaments to get into the NCAA tournament.
Because you won't
see
sound.
It again. Yeah, you won't see it again.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Brian in Portland texts in and says, "As a Tennessee fan, I would much rather like to see Texas A&M or Vanderbilt on Friday. Florida is just too dangerous, especially if they get Mann back, for me to feel very comfortable about that game."
Yeah, Trey Mann should be back, I believe. He had migraines and couldn't play Sunday, and that was big for them. Tennessee has not seen the full-strength Florida this year. So I would agree. I mean, if you're Tennessee, you hope that whoever wins tonight maybe gets that little edge on Florida. Florida is just, they're just up and down. You know, they lost to Missouri last week in Tennessee. There are times I look at them and say, that's a really good team. And Castleton protects the rim, and they've got a lot of nice pieces. But then they just go into these funks. I mean, Tennessee's defense gets a lot of credit. But, man, you score 21 points in 24 minutes. Come on, you know. And that's kind of a Mike White thing. I think he's a really good coach. But his teams have these offensive lulls. So they could lose to a Vanderbilt tomorrow. That is possible. And yeah, if you're Tennessee, you'd take that.
Yeah. Real quickly on the bigger picture of college basketball, Gonzaga still remains 26-0. Now they were down yesterday 53-41 at the half against BYU.
They blew it.
Why do you think they blew it? They came in the second half, outscored them 47-25. Did they blow their opportunity to get that one loss out of the way quickly?
Take your loss. Get the loss out of the way. Now you're not going to win the tournament. I'll take the field. Give me the field. Gonzaga is not going to win it because they let themselves be undefeated going the tournament. The last time a team did that, tell me the year quickly.
Was it 2015? 2014?
No, I'm sorry. You're right. That's the last time a team went in. But I'm saying the last time a team went undefeated.
Oh, went undefeated. I have no clue.
1976 Indiana Hoosiers.
Ew.
Bobby Knight.
I thought Kentucky was going to be that team a few years ago.
Yes.
Didn't work.
No. And that was, talk about an epic game, that Wisconsin-Kentucky. I was writing from courtside of Michigan State getting blown out by Duke and watching that game and be like, I'd rather just watch this game. Incredible. But that team should have won it all. Should have won. Flat out, that was the best team. Period. Best team Calipari will ever coach. And what happened?
You brought this
up. They let themselves go undefeated.
You brought this up with Casey Alexander a couple weeks ago about, hey, is it ever good to lose? Maybe get a loss out of the way. And he rejected that completely.
Sure. I mean, a coach can't feel that way.
Sure.
But
you
did. They lost games after that.
And then they lost three games out of the next four.
It's your fault, Joe.
Oh, God, you're right. I'm sorry. Sorry, Casey. But, yeah, coaches can't feel that way. Of course not. And Gonzaga is fully embracing, well, hey, let's be the first undefeated champ since the Hoosiers 76. I'm here to tell you, they blew it.
Just blew that opportunity last night. We'll see what happens with Gonzaga as the tournament gets underway here coming up. When we come back, it's time for The Choice Is Yours. Ryan Porth in the questions chair today. We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And it is that time of the week. Time for The Choice Is Yours here on Robbie and Rex Road. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth. We throw out different scenarios both in sports and in life, and then we debate on how we would respond to said scenarios. Today in the questions chair is none other than Ryan Porth. With that in mind, Porth, I turn things over to you.
Well, I'll turn it back to you. Would you guys like to start with sports or non-sports here?
Sports. We like sports.
All right. We've been talking a lot this morning about how the Titans are moving on from Malcolm Butler. For you, what is the most mad or devastated you've been at a favorite team of yours trading or releasing a player in the past?
Ooh, that's a good question.
That is a very good question. Do you need a minute? Because I need a minute.
I mean, there is a obvious one that comes to mind. When the Miami Heat decided not to re-sign Dwayne Wade and let him go to Chicago, that was very upsetting to me. I went through approximately a 12-day mourning period at that point, even though Dwayne Wade was not the Dwayne Wade of old at that point, it hurt my soul to see it. So that was, to me, number one on the list. He should have never been anywhere else other than the Miami Heat. When I see his pictures to this day in a Chicago Bulls uniform, it brings up legit anger inside of me, and that is number one on the list.
I would say the same thing for me when the Titans did not re-sign Eddie George and he ended up with the Cowboys. Although Eddie George was at the end of his career.
Right. It's just wrong for him to be in that uniform, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So for me, I'm going to go back to the late 80s, and actually I'll go two in a row. The Detroit Tigers let Lance Parrish go to the Angels, which was crushing for me. One of my favorite players, great catcher. Now, they won the division without him. Matt Noakes was a great rookie, so it cushioned the blow. The harder one was Kirk Gibson a year later.
Yep.
Kirk Gibson was a great player. Kirk Gibson, by the way, could have been a great NFL player. Michigan State star. Tigers, just a Tigers hero. A hero as a child. But the thing is, I was so angry he went to the Dodgers, and yet when he hit that home run off Eckersley, I was screaming. I was so, like, I still loved Kirk Gibson.
Sure.
You know? So, yeah, those two. That was hard. Thanks for bringing that up, Poyle. Now I'm very upset.
You just called me Poyle.
Poyle.
Oh my gosh,
David Poyle.
There's a Freudian slip.
Yeah.
What does that mean? I have to analyze that psychologically.
I don't know.
Very quick story. When I lived in Cincinnati, my dad and I went to Cincinnati Cyclones minor league hockey games. They were in the IHL back then. And there was a specific player on that team that I had grown close to because I went to his hockey camp a couple years in a row. And he was my favorite player on the Cyclones. His name was Don Biggs. And we found out in the newspaper in the middle of the season that he had been traded to Utah. And I cried.
Oh, the good old days of the newspaper.
Yeah.
I did not find out on Twitter in 96 or 97 or whatever year that was.
That's how it used to be.
But I was a huge Don Biggs fan. With the Cincinnati Cyclones.
Legendary Don Biggs of the Cincinnati Cyclones.
That was not David Poyle's fault.
No, it was not. Sorry about your loss, Porth.
So, moving on to non-sports. A lot of spring break going on around the country. So, prompted me to ask you this question. If you're allowed to only take one vacation for the rest of your life, where do you go?
Ooh. For the rest of my life.
It has to be a beach vacation to me, as much as I love. We've tried to do different things, like, I mean, New Orleans, great place, yeah. You know, like that. I'm probably going to say Charleston. I'm probably going to say Charleston, South Carolina.
Great spot.
I love, we've definitely done what a lot of people do here and gone down to, you know, Orange Beach and all that area and Sandestin and stuff. And that's great. I haven't been to some of the other places that people. I'm like, I've never been to Cancun or anything like that. So maybe there's probably a better Turks and Caicos. I haven't been. I mean, some of those are probably better. But to me, Charleston has. You have the beach. You have multiple beaches, and you also have a really cool downtown and restaurant situation.
The
and
cobblestone
everything.
Roads. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a good combo of everything. So I know it's not sexy, but I know it. And so I'm going to go Charleston.
I don't disagree with anything you just said there. I would, if I can only have one for the remainder of my life, I will take a different approach. Probably Israel and the Holy Land there. Ooh. I would love to go to Jerusalem and just kind of hang out there. Obviously, like, I'm heavily involved in my church, and like, there's just a big connection there that I would love to experience. So if I had one the rest of my life, that would be it.
Well, you got good beach stuff there,
too,
absolutely.
By the way. Absolutely. Yeah. Go hang out in the Dead Sea.
I'm with Joe. I want to go somewhere where I've been and I know it's a good time.
Okay.
Hilton Head.
That's a nice time.
I love Hilton Head. We've been twice in the last couple of years, and we will be back many times.
Very nice.
A lot of Carolina love.
Yeah, people love the state of South Carolina here on the program.
I mean, last segment you said they were the worst basketball team in the history of basketball teams. So
we made up for it.
Moving back to sports, this past weekend would have been the NFL Combine. I don't think any of us really missed the underwear Olympics on our TVs over the weekend. But who would you take in a 40-yard dash, Darren McFarland or Chase McCabe?
Oh, man. We get a lot of hate to Chase on this program, and I'm going Darren by a significant margin.
Really?
Yeah, like I think Chase would fall down.
You would trip over the 20-yard line?
I don't think he's making it. Did you say 100 yards?
No, 40.
He's not making it 40 yards. He would get to about the 13, 14-yard mark of this and start stumbling. About 26 yards, he's face first on the ground. Darren, I have faith to finish the race.
I will bet you a ton of money. Put everything on Chase McCabe.
Really?
Well, Darren, you know, I can say this as a fellow old guy. I don't know, man. Those knees, you know, they start acting up on you. You know, I don't trust Darren to finish.
You ever
the
seen
race.
The video of guys like on a dirt bike and they just get the wobbles and they're starting to shake around all over the place and lose control? That's what I picture Chase McCabe running a 40-yard dash looking like.
You're actually saying that he wouldn't. I mean, I know that Chase McCabe swings a sledgehammer like a young child, but I think that he could.
If I were putting the FanDuel Sportsbook odds on it, minus 150 that Chase McCabe falls down.
I'm putting a big chunk. Chase, I've got you, man. You will blow Darren McFarland away.
But I'm taking Darren in this race all day long.
All right, break the tie, Porth.
I would probably lean Chase.
Go young.
What about the disrespect here for Darren McFarland?
Tight race. I love Darren.
Elite athlete,
he's
Darren
not
McFarland.
He's not as nimble as he used to be. I mean, he talks
about
the injuries.
Works out all the time.
Well, yes, but he talks about the injuries he's sustained over the years. He talks about that all the time on the air.
Yeah, Chase will get. I mean, you know, it won't be
blazing.
Yeah, it won't be pretty, but Chase will get it.
We've got to set this up. This cannot be a theoretical practice anymore. Darren can run 40 yards without hurting himself. We've got to set this race up. Got to
go youth, just like Butler and Adoree. You know, I'm going young.
Okay. All right.
We got to make it happen.
Who tackles better in open space, Chase or Adoree?
Or Adoree?
Ooh, come on now.
I'm Adoree's kidding.
He's not that.
I'm kidding.
Maybe Chase on
I'm
accident
kidding.
Falls into somebody.
Like a bull in a china shop.
Yeah.
All right. Last question. Really looking forward to this one. So Sunday is Selection Sunday. Who would be your four number one seeds of the greatest bands of all time?
Oh, man.
Not artists. Bands.
Okay. I mean, Foo Fighters is on that list as a number one seed, for sure. I would put, just to make Joe Rexroad mad, Blink-182 on that list as a one seed.
What?
He's putting it on
you
there.
You are not.
I'm putting them on there. I love Blink-182.
But you don't actually think that.
I think I do.
Oh,
I love Blink-182.
God. Okay.
It's a generational gap between you and me, my friend.
There's an ear,
AC/DC.
There's an ears that need to be cleaned out gap.
Give me some AC/DC on there as well.
I
you
like
agree? You like that?
I mean, I love them.
Okay. Yeah. Who would the other one be? Maybe Guns N' Roses. I love me some Guns N' Roses.
I love them, too.
There you go. That's my four.
Do you need more time, Joe?
Well, the fourth is difficult here. Three are easy for me. Beatles,
oh,
Led
God.
Zeppelin, Rolling Stones.
I knew you were going to say Beatles.
Yeah. I mean, don't. We'll work on you there. It's not, I want to hold your hand 100 times. Beatles, Led Zeppelin, Rolling
Brutal.
Stones. Man, the fourth one is really hard. There's a lot of classic rock bands I would think about. Man, I'm going to go Radiohead.
Okay.
Radiohead's my fourth. Pixies,
that's a good one.
Pixies are right there, but Radiohead.
I'm going with Rolling Stones, the Beatles. I mean, I'm not the biggest Beatles guy, but they're the most popular band of all time. So they are a number one seed.
And influential.
Yes, exactly.
And best.
Metallica.
Ooh, I love that too.
Metallica, when our sister station, 102.9 The Buzz, does the Buzz Bracket Brawl every March, they win almost every year.
Metallica was a gross oversight on my part. That should be a number one seed. Continue.
And then it's tough. If I go with my heart, I'm going with Foo Fighters. If I'm going with my head, I'm going with Queen.
Ooh, okay.
Ooh, that's a good one.
I like Queen.
Yeah, that's good. Way to go, Porth.
Those are, I mean, really, that was all good except for your freaking Blink-182. Jeez. Like, talk about tainting the water.
No, man.
And we talked about
band.
All great bands there.
They're
and
great
then you taint the water with Blink-182.
And it was
great.
The second band that was mentioned in the entire segment.
I'm just telling you, they're a great band.
Okay, so
go check out the Greatest Hits album.
I think my 16 seeds are Creed, Live, Bush, and Blink-182.
I'd have Creed a little higher than you do, too.
Those are my NIT.
Okay.
What about Nickelback?
Oh, God. There's so many bad ones we could talk about.
What's the tournament, like, below the NIT?
The
CBI?
CTI?
The CBI.
Yeah, the CBI.
Yeah. Is Nickelback going to that tournament?
Well, that, I mean, honestly, like those bands, Nickelback, Live, Bush, Creed, Blink-182, like they should be relegated like from the sport entirely.
Wow.
You got some text? Text reaction? Yeah.
Heidi from Dixon on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com,
not
says,
supporting me.
Never heard of Food Fighters. Me either.
Oh,
looking forward to
gosh.
That band.
Food Fighters.
Thank you, Heidi.
We love you,
we
Heidi.
We appreciate it. When we come back, we're going to switch gears and get back into some football talk. Emory Hunt from Football Game Plan will join us. We'll look ahead to the NFL draft coming up with him. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.